You know, usually when you picture an empire under attack, you imagine like catapults and battering rams.
Right, yeah. The threat is incredibly obvious. You can literally stand on the wall and see the army coming for you.
Exactly. It's totally physical. But when you look at the absolute titans of the tech world right now, the modern empires that basically dictate how you live your life, how you communicate, how you find information, the walls they're building aren't for armies at all.
No, not at all. They are bracing for entirely invisible threats.
Right. We're talking about, predictive algorithms, massive antitrust lawsuits, and even the mind-bending reality of quantum physics.
It is a totally different kind of warfare.
It really is. So today we are doing a deep dive into a stack of dispatches from the front lines of tech, all dated May 23, 2026. And the overarching theme here, I think, is survival.
Yeah, survival is the perfect word for it. These major players are either fiercely defending their existing monopolies from new challengers, or in some cases, proactively building massive barricades against future existential threats.
And nobody, I mean nobody, is fighting harder for their life right now than Google. So let's look at their official appeal of that massive illegal search monopoly ruling.
Yeah, so the foundation of this appeal traces directly back to Judge Amit Mehta's September 2025 remedies decision.
Right.
The court basically ordered Google to share its highly valuable search data with its competitors to level the playing field. And Google is now fighting that remedy with a really aggressive defense.
Very aggressive. They're basically stating on the record that they simply won the market fair and square.
Exactly. They're saying, hey, we built a vastly superior search engine, and the judge's remedies wildly exceed judicial discretion.
So, okay, let's unpack this for a second, because their argument gets incredibly specific, especially when they take aim at generative AI companies like OpenAI and Anthropic.
Yeah, that's where it gets really interesting. Google is essentially arguing that these AI companies shouldn't get a free ride on the $200 billion year search index that Google spent, a quarter of a century building.
Right. It's like, think about it like being sued for monopolizing your town's library
Yeah.
system and the judge ordering you to hand over all your meticulously organized book data to a brand new hyper-intelligent robot that basically wants to replace the act of reading entirely.
That analogy captures the exact dynamic Google is so worried about, because their legal filing explicitly points out that these generative AI companies didn't even exist during the period of the alleged monopolistic conduct.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the timeline is super critical there.
Right, so Google is arguing that forcing them to share data now essentially forces them to subsidize the very rival AI search engines that are actively trying to put them out of business.
Which is wild. And, the stakes for you, the average user listening to this, are just astronomical. I mean, consider the $20 billion annual payment Google makes to Apple just to be the default search engine on your iPhone Safari browser.
Yeah, that specific arrangement is essentially the financial cornerstone of the modern mobile internet.
But the U.S. government is pushing back just as hard, though. I mean, they filed a cross appeal to force Google to sell off the Chrome browser entirely.
They did.
So if you actually sever Chrome from Google, or if that default payment to Apple is blocked, how does that actually alter the landscape for the end user? Like, how does it change things for you and me?
Well, it completely upends the on-ramp to the internet. I mean, if Apple is no longer allowed to take $20 billion from Google for that default Safari spot, Apple might auction it off to a different provider. Or, more likely, they might integrate a generative AI model natively.
Bypassing traditional search engines altogether.
Exactly. But the crucial factor here is the clock. Because this appeals process is incredibly slow, we are looking at 2 to 3 years of litigation.
Right, which means a final Supreme Court resolution likely won't land until, what, 2028 or 2029?
Yeah, at the earliest.
Which basically means Google is tying up the AI threat in court for the next 36 months. But here's the thing, if you run a business or you manage a brand, you don't have 3 years to wait for a Supreme Court decision to tell you how people are going to find your website.
Not at all. You have to survive the shift to AI search right this minute.
Exactly. And the market is realizing that traditional SEO, search engine optimization, the whole strategy of stuffing keywords into a website to get it to the top of Google's blue links is rapidly losing its effectiveness.
It is. And that realization is creating a massive vacuum for a new kind of company to fill, which brings us to a startup out of Berlin called Peek.
Right, Peek. The sources note they just hit $10 million in annual recurring revenue, ARR, in just a matter of months.
Which is huge.
Yeah, and this was following a $21 million Series A at a valuation over $100 million. And the crazy thing is, they aren't even doing SEO. They are pioneering this concept called GEO.
Generative engine optimization.
Right.
And, you know, the underlying shift here goes way beyond just the impressive revenue numbers. We're actually seeing a stark cultural contrast here, too.
How so?
Well, European startups like Peak are focusing heavily on actual profitability and sustainable growth. And that's a huge shift from the traditional American startup model of, you know, hyper growth fueled by endless venture capital.
I see.
Yeah, in a volatile AI market, investors are suddenly flocking to companies that offer a concrete survival tool and actually turn a profit while doing it.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
But mechanically, like, how does GEO actually work? Because if traditional SEO tools are practically obsolete, since they just measure web traffic and keyword density, what exactly is Peak optimized? Like, how do you optimize for a chatbot?
You really have to look at the mechanics of an AI search engine like ChatGPT or Perplexity. They provide what we call zero-click results.
Okay.
So when you ask a question, you don't get a list of websites to visit. You get a complete synthesized answer directly in the chat window.
Right. The AI just tells you the answer.
Exactly. And if your brand or your product isn't explicitly cited within that AI-generated response, you effectively do not exist in that user's reality.
Wow. So GEO is the science of making sure the AI models pull your content as the definitive foundational fact.
Precisely.
So it's less about being the loudest voice in the room or having those backlinks, and more about being like the encyclopedia the AI reads before it speaks to the user.
That's a great way to put it. You have to structure your data with really clear headings, high-density facts, and semantic phrasing that a large language model can easily digest.
Right. It's a fundamental paradigm shift. I mean, you're going from trying to rank as a hyperlink to trying to become the underlying truth the AI relies on. Businesses literally have to retrain their entire marketing apparatus to feed the machine.
They do. It's adapt or die.
So, okay, while businesses are scrambling to figure out how to get noticed by AI, Meta is over here figuring out how to use AI to keep you from ever looking away.
Yeah, they are suddenly moving very aggressively to ring-fence their massive community ecosystem from specialized threats.
Right, because Meta just launched a new iPhone app called Forum. And looking at the architecture of the app in our sources, it's a highly targeted direct attack on Reddit.
It absolutely is. And the launch strategy is what really caught my eye.
Oh my gosh, yes. Because Meta generated over $56 billion in revenue in the first quarter of 2026 alone. Usually, a company that size throws a massive, press event for a new product.
Right, with a big stage and a live stream.
Exactly. But they launched Forum with zero announcements. No press release, no big keynote. They just quietly slipped it into the App Store. Why hide a major launch like that?
Well, the silent launch is actually highly intentional because Forum takes Facebook groups and basically pulls them out of the main app into a dedicated, separate feed.
Okay.
And this represents a broader fragmentation strategy at Meta. Mark Zuckerberg and Chief Product Officer Chris Cox reportedly have plans to build up to 50 new standalone apps.
50. That's insane.
Yeah, they realize that their main app has become incredibly cluttered, so they're extracting the most valuable features and giving them dedicated, specialized experiences.
Which makes sense because right now, if you want to check your local neighborhood Facebook group just to see, like, why a helicopter is circling your street, you have to wade through an absolute swamp of suggested reels,
Yeah.
marketplace advertisements, and, your uncle's political rants.
Right, the friction is just too high for genuine community building.
Oh.
And Meta has an astonishing 1.8 billion monthly active users in groups.
1.8 billion just in group.
Just in groups. And for context, Reddit has about 500 million total.
Wow.
So Meta has more than three times the user base, but those users are completely distracted by the rest of Facebook. By pulling groups into Forum, Meta is actively defending its territory.
And the financial markets interpreted this threat instantly, right? I mean,
Yeah.
Reddit stock dropped nearly 6% the moment the Forum app was discovered by tech journalists.
Instantly. And Meta is deploying some really heavy AI artillery inside this new app, too.
Yeah, I saw they included an Ask with AI feature that synthesizes answers from across multiple groups. Plus, they have admin AI assistants to help moderate.
Yeah, and they're also allowing nickname posting, which is very clearly aimed at dismantling Reddit's pseudonymous culture where nobody uses their real name.
Oh, absolutely. It
Yeah.
seems like they're basically building a velvet rope around these groups, and they're using AI as the bouncer so the user never even wants to leave.
The strategy actually goes a bit deeper than just keeping users engaged, though, because Facebook groups are historically very under-monetized for Meta.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. By using AI to instantly summarize sprawling discussions and giving admins powerful automated tools to moderate thousands of users effortlessly, Meta creates a far superior frictionless environment. But your Facebook account still ties it all together in the background.
So they are leveraging their massive AI infrastructure to maintain total ecosystem lock-in.
Exactly.
So Meta is using AI to lock users inside their walled garden. But Apple is dealing with the exact opposite problem.
Right. What happens when AI sneaks over the wall and pollutes their garden, specifically their music platform?
Yeah, because the music industry is currently facing just an overwhelming flood of AI-generated tracks.
Yeah.
And a significant portion of this content is designed specifically to game the streaming royalty system.
It's a huge problem. And Apple Music just rolled out their new anti-AI spam tools to combat this.
And their approach is interesting, because instead of banning AI music outright, like some of the smaller indie platforms have done, or taking a totally hands-off approach like Spotify, Apple is taking this disclosure-based middle path.
Right. They are requiring labels and distributors to use transparency tags for any tracks, artwork, or compositions that utilize AI.
Okay, but what's the philosophy driving that decision?
Well, for Apple, it's the idea that technology should amplify human artists, not replace them. They want to allow genuine innovation. I mean, if a producer uses an advanced generative AI tool to create a completely new synth texture, Apple wants that on the platform.
Right, that's art.
Exactly. But they also built internal detection tools that will automatically remove AI songs if the data shows the majority of their plays come from stream manipulation.
Okay, but let's be real. Amplifying artists is a nice PR line. But in reality, how does a transparency tag actually stop a bot farm in Eastern Europe from siphoning millions in royalties? Like, if someone generates a catchy AI pop song, will a teenager streaming it in their car really care about the tag?
Probably not.
Right. It feels like slapping a warning label on an unstoppable flood.
Well, the tag itself isn't what stops the bot farm. The tag establishes the legal and policy framework for removal.
Ah, okay. Walk me through that.
So stream manipulation mechanically relies on server farms playing 30-second AI tracks on a loop 24 hours a day using thousands of fake accounts.
Right, just farming pennies.
Exactly. And this literally steals from the shared royalty pool that pays actual human artists. When Apple requires a transparency tag, it forces the distributor to declare the nature of the content up front.
Okay, I'm with you.
If Apple's internal tools then detect the robotic listening patterns associated with those tagged tracks, they have immediate grounds to pull the content and ban the distributor. They don't have to get bogged down in endless appeals about whether the song was real or not. It's essentially a structural trap for bad actors.
That makes so much more sense. The tag is basically the tripwire for the enforcement mechanism.
Exactly.
But, you know, fighting bot farms on a music app is really just a present-day skirmish, because Apple's biggest security move this week is preparing for a terrifying threat that doesn't even actually exist yet.
Yeah, this specific development might honestly be the most technically consequential story in our entire stack today. Apple just released its post-quantum cryptography, or PQC, source code directly onto GitHub.
Yeah, this is their core crypto code, which they published on May 22, 2026. And for anyone keeping track, this is the absolute bedrock of all device security across iOS and macOS.
It's everything. It handles your passwords, your encrypted messages, all of it.
So why on earth would a famously secretive company like Apple release their most critical security foundation to the public?
Because of the looming quantum threat. In the next decade, quantum computers will mature to a point where they can easily shatter the encryption we currently rely on today.
Really? How?
Well, currently, protocols like RSA and ECC rely on incredibly complex mathematical problems, like finding the prime factors of extremely large numbers.
Right.
For a classical computer, testing every possible combination to guess the answer would take millions of years. But a powerful quantum machine uses something called Shor's algorithm.
Shor's algorithm.
And it doesn't guess sequentially. It uses quantum states to basically collapse all the wrong answers simultaneously, revealing the correct prime factors in a matter of seconds.
Hold on. Before we go further, for those of us who aren't quantum physicists,
yeah.
What does that actually mean for our current data? Does it mean every password and private message currently sitting on a server will just pop open like a cheap padlock?
Yes, that is the exact scenario. And it leads to a strategy that intelligence agencies and bad actors are actually employing right now called Harvest Now, Decrypt Later.
Harvest Now, Decrypt Later. Okay.
Yeah. They are aggressively scooping up mountains of encrypted data, private text messages, banking records, corporate trade secrets. They cannot read a single word of it today, but they are storing it in massive data centers, just waiting for the day a quantum computer comes online to unlock all of it retroactively.
So let me get this straight. Imagine a thief stealing your heavily bolted safe today. They can't open it, but they steal it anyway because they know someone is going to invent a magic blowtorch 10 years from now.
Exactly.
So what Apple is doing is basically changing the laws of physics on the safe itself before the blowtorch is even invented.
That visualizes the timeline perfectly. By implementing these post-quantum algorithms now, which, by the way, are standardized by the National Institute of Standards and Technology, Apple ensures that data encrypted today remains completely secure against the quantum computers of tomorrow.
That's incredible. And it's already active, right?
It is. This new cryptography is running right now on iMessage via their PQ3 protocol, on your VPN connections, Mac remote logins, and even the secure local link between your iPhone and your Apple Watch.
But returning to the source code release, why open source it? Why give it to everyone?
Because Apple recognizes a fundamental rule of cryptography. Secrecy is not security. If you hide your code, you also hide its flaws.
Ah, right.
Open sourcing their foundational library allows for rigorous, crowdsourced auditing by the absolute best security researchers worldwide. They can spot mathematical vulnerabilities that Apple's internal team might have missed.
That makes total sense.
But more importantly, it forces the entire industry's hand. By showing their work and freely providing the tools, Apple establishes an industry benchmark. It puts immense public pressure on every other tech giant to step up and upgrade their own quantum defenses.
That's a power move. So we've secured the future of Earth's data by fundamentally changing the math. But the pressure on these massive tech empires isn't just happening in software code or encryption algorithms. It's happening in massive hardware engineering and incredibly high-stakes financial markets, too.
Oh, yeah.
Let's look at SpaceX and the launch of Starship V3.
Yeah, this is the 407-foot rocket, arguably the most complex and powerful machine ever built by humanity. And its most recent flight test had some pretty severe complications.
Yeah, looking at the post-launch data, they successfully launched from Starbase in Texas, and they did deploy 20 Starlink satellite simulators into orbit. The upper stage of the rocket even managed a successful simulated landing in the Indian Ocean.
Right. Those are huge milestones.
But the crucial part, the massive super heavy booster, failed to reignite its engines for the return trip. It literally crashed into the Gulf of Mexico and exploded. Plus, they lost one of the Raptor engines during the initial ascent.
Right. Now, in the context of SpaceX's traditional engineering philosophy, where they intentionally launch prototype hardware, push it to the breaking point, gather the data from the explosion, and iterate rapidly. This seems like standard operating procedure.
Sure, blow it up to see how it works.
Exactly. But the external environment has shifted dramatically. The timing changes the gravity of this explosion entirely because SpaceX's IPO filing just became public knowledge this week.
Yeah, the IPO. Mm-hmm. They're expected to list on the NASDAQ in mid-June to raise $75 billion. And the sources note that some of this massive capital raise is reportedly going to pay off debt associated with Elon Musk's other ventures like XAI and the social media company X,
yeah,
which completely changes the context of a rocket exploding. This Starship V3 launch was very likely the last launch SpaceX will ever do as a private company. Next time they fly, if a booster crashes into the ocean, it doesn't just damage hardware. It tanks the stock price in real time on a public exchange.
Absolutely. The transition to a publicly traded company introduces a level of financial pressure that fundamentally alters their engineering timeline. SpaceX desperately needs full, rapid reusability to make their core business model function.
Right. And they plan to catch these returning boosters directly out of the sky using massive mechanical chopstick arms attached to the launch tower.
Which is just a crazy visual to imagine.
I know. I've always wondered about that. Why go through the terrifying process of catching a building-sized rocket with metal arms? Why not just put landing legs on it like they do with their older Falcon 9 rockets?
Because in aerospace engineering, weight is the ultimate enemy. Yeah. Every single pound of heavy mechanical landing legs attached to the rocket is a pound of profitable payload you cannot take to orbit.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So by moving the landing gear off the rocket and onto the launch tower, the rocket itself becomes little more than a lightweight flying fuel tank. This vastly improves the economics of spaceflight.
That is brilliant.
They need that rapid airplane-like turnaround and maximize payload capacity to cheaply and constantly deploy their Starlink satellites. Because Starlink is the profitable engine driving the entire company's valuation right now.
Right.
To satisfy future public shareholders, they have to prove they can nail this chopstick catch consistently without exploding.
The stakes are just unbelievable across every sector we've looked at today. From Google fiercely defending its multi-billion dollar search dominance in federal court, to startups like Peek pioneering the new mechanics of generative engine optimization.
Yeah, and we've seen Meta launch stealth apps to fragment its user base and neutralize Reddit's growth. And Apple drawing firm lines, building tripwires to catch AI bot farms on Apple Music, while simultaneously open sourcing its quantum defenses to protect the globe's most sensitive data.
And finally, SpaceX, racing to perfect the physics of rocket catching before the unforgiving pressure of the public stock market kicks in. It really proves that in technology, the moment you stop building walls or adapting your defenses, your empire is already crumbling.
It is. And for you listening, whether you are a community admin who is going to be navigating Meta's new AI moderation tools, a business owner realizing you need to overhaul your entire web strategy for GEO today, or just someone texting securely on an iPhone, these massive tectonic shifts are not theoretical.
Not at all.
They are actively rewriting the rules of your daily life. The infrastructure of the internet and the physical world is shifting right beneath your feet.
It really is. We started this deep dive by talking about how these tech empires are building walls against invisible threats. But I will leave you with the final thought to ponder that really connects all of this. We talked about generative AI engines completely disrupting traditional search, and we talked about quantum computers eventually possessing the raw mathematical power to break the foundational encryption of the internet.
Yeah.
What happens when those two incredibly disruptive forces collide? When generative AI isn't just running on today's silicon servers, but is supercharged by the absolutely incomprehensible processing power of a quantum computer. Will a concept like GEO even matter? Or will the AI instantly synthesize every piece of data humanity has ever produced without needing to be fed? Something to think about the next time you type a simple question into a search bar. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Stay insanely curious out there.